Joining us now is Jack Lawson. He has civildefensemanual.com. Always great to talk to Jack, and I wanted to talk to Jack again because we see a lot of trouble spots being escalated. We've got a lot of infrastructure issues, and of course, infrastructure was the very first thing he and I talked about years ago. Thanks for joining us, Jack. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good.
Thanks for having me on again, David.
Okay, thank you for coming on. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about you sent some clips and of some things that we can pull up, and I've got those now. So we got a little bit of technical issues that have I think we're getting them squared away. Tell us, what's your concern right now as we look at the global and domestic situations? What's your major concern in terms of preparation and threat?
Well, my major concern is the drum I've been beating for some probably close to 50 years, and that is that Americans are ill-prepared. They're totally underprepared for any kind of disruption. As I've gone through five some decades of this, it's gotten more heightened because of the obvious issue of our reliance on technology. Mm-hmm. To me, that's one of the biggest issues. There's a number of issues. I can't even go over them all. I mean, we've got a border, but we don't have a border. you know, it's not even a line in the sand anymore. That's might be a fence there, but people think it's a cattle fence or whatever. Keep the sheep in from going south to Mexico to Cancun. There are a myriad of issues to me that any one of which could cause us and will cause us problem. One of the biggest, I've got a good friend, he deals in this. We use 4,000 terabytes of energy in this country. We've cut down on the production capability, and he said we're going to be massively short by summer's end here, maybe earlier than that. And this is what he deals with, redundancy of power. Mm-hmm. For major corporations, Microsoft being one of them. And he's advising all these people, if you got a backup generator, get another backup generator and get plenty of fuel because you're not going to have any electricity. Mm. So your functionality is going to be dead in the water.
And it's looking even worse long-term because they keep adding things to the grid, saying, I'm sorry, you can't have a gas stove, you can't have a gas car. Everything's going to be on the grid as they are destroying the grid like a bunch of gremlins. And so that's their long-term plan. It's not going to get any better. It's going to continue to get worse. It's going to be more expensive, more unreliable, and they are adding, as I was talking about earlier in the program, you look at artificial intelligence and the burden that that's going to be in addition to other things that are already there. That's a massive power consumption that's being added to the grid along with all these other things while they're pulling it apart. But then you've got things like the Baltimore Bridge, which nobody saw that coming. And look at the knock-on effects that could happen from that if they can't get that thing open quickly. That is something that, whether it was deliberate or whether it was an accident, it just shows how fragile our infrastructure is.
Yes. In regards to that ship hitting the Francis Scott Key Bridge, I find it interesting. Again, this is, what do you believe? I find it interesting that the last 2 minutes of the black box disappeared. That ship took a sharp 90-degree turn. This is obviously well in the within the capabilities of any major country like Russia or China conducting a sabotage issue like this. You drive your car down the road, if somebody is intent to get after you, they can get into a modern car now.
Yeah.
And this has been proven. There was a journalist that was coming out with a article critical of the CIA that all of a sudden ended up running into trees at 130 miles an hour out in California.
That's right.
And the NSA director said, oh yeah, well, we can do that. I mean, we wouldn't do that, but you know, how much you want to believe that's another story. But there's just too much of a capability. One way or another, I think that there's probably was American influence and backing of the plot or the issue that killed all the Russians in the theater over there. And I think they are getting their payback. And our country does not want to admit that they have the capability of this. It's just too frightening for people to realize.
That's right.
There are so many issues.
They'll never admit anything like that. And then shortly after that, we had another large tanker that lost power. They got that under control with some tugboats. But, you know, I said at the time, when you look at it, that was the key. Why did it lose power? And they wouldn't even, you know, mention the idea that it could be something about cybersecurity. And I don't know how these things are set up, but everything is so automated now that you can do something on the side. And you can have devastating effects in terms of systems that are all interconnected to the computers. We saw months ago, we had the FCC, the FAA, they shut down all American airports. Why? Well, because they had this ancillary system on the side, the NOTAM system, that was reporting to them if there was going to be any issues anywhere around an airport, anything on the runway, anything like that. And if that system goes down, they just shut down all air travel for about 12 hours. And they said, oh, it's not a hack. And yet, after it came up, about an hour and a half later, Canada's NOTAM system went down. And they shut things down very quickly, but it didn't stay shut down. I think in both these cases, there was some kind of a blackmail, and they paid it off. It took them a while to come to that decision in the U.S. I think after they saw what had happened in the U.S., when it happened in Canada, they did it. So they're not going to admit that there was a cyber attack. They're never going to admit that.
Absolutely.
But, you know, it could, even if it was an accident.
Yeah, just like the Nord Stream pipeline was blown up by the Russians.
That's right.
That's a laugh and a half, you know.
That's right.
They'll never get to the bottom of that. They've gotten to the bottom. There are people who know what's going on there, but you're never going to hear the truth of the matter. It's too alien for most people to comprehend.
That's right.
I think it's, you know, there's a number of things. Take the airport situation. Take the aircraft cowlings coming off, wing flaps coming off. That side. Take that out of the picture. People have to realize they get in an airplane. I'm both private and helicopter rated. I've flown quite a few hours, but this is quite a while ago, and now the modern airliner, and I've got friends that are retired airline pilots, the modern airliner is the only thing the pilot does, and the co-pilot, is basically check engine controls, flap settings, directional, keep the electronics, ensure that they're working, but they don't fly that plane.
Yeah.
That plane takes off under their supervision. They probably do more at takeoff than they ever do anything else. All during that flight, it's controlled by a computer system. When it goes to land, it's basically controlled by a computer system with the pilots overseeing it and taking over in the last few minutes. That is one part of this thing. The other part, I think that people don't realize, is the obvious failability of these systems. They're,
yes,
everybody's hacking everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I just had a situation where it's getting to be a technological collusion and collision. It's absolutely beyond comprehension how complex these systems are getting, trying to keep them from getting hacked. And in the process, when you put two-step authentication on, that type of thing, your bank system goes crazy and trying to download to an accounting system. We've been going through this for the last 3 months, and we get it going, and you talk to the people at the companies, either the bank or the accounting company, and they're pretty much at a loss. So you tell me what's protected, you know?
It's kind of interesting. The guy, the comedian that plays Mr. Bean, was the name Rowan Atkinson? Is that what?
Yeah.
And he's an electrical engineer, but he's very wealthy, obviously, and he likes to buy exotic, state of the art sports cars and stuff like that. And he says, "Well, with these cars, you don't so much drive them as you manage them." It's like a drive-by wire thing. He goes, and it kind of takes some of the fun out of it, you know, because there's so many systems that are in the way. Well, you better hope that those systems are functioning correctly. You better hope that somebody hasn't messed with them. And you were talking about the journalist, and that was probably back in 2013, Michael Hastings, that hit that tree, except that his engine went straight, and you know, he's going really fast. I got some pictures of him going really fast, and then there's an explosion. His engine was found in the direction that he was traveling, way down the road, and yet his car veered off to the right and hit a tree. And they said, oh, he died because he hit the tree. No, the engine was ejected before he hit the tree. And hitting the tree is not going to eject your engine. It's going to push it into you. You know, if you're doing something like that, wow. And it caught fire. And he had already told people that, hey, I'm doing this special report. And and he would go out and look at, he had a rental Mercedes. I think he rented it, but it was a Mercedes. And it had more of the bells and whistles on it than the other cars at the time did. This is before everybody had elements of, remote control or autonomous control on the cars. But the Mercedes had quite a few of those on there. And he would go out and look underneath the car before he would go somewhere because he thought they were after him. Even before we found that out, I'd been talking to Eric Peters and to another guest that we have all the time, Goat Tree, talking about these different hacking contests that they were doing, taking over cars and taking control of them. And that was, 12, 13, 14 years ago. So that kind of stuff has been going on for a long time. So that's really child's play for them to do that type of thing.
Hastings died prematurely. If you move the time up to now, any expose that he did would just be shrugged off.
Yeah.
These, the government agencies used to have some type of fear of being humiliated. Mm-hmm. They don't care now. They don't care what people know.
Yeah.
They don't care what they do. They don't care if it becomes public. There is no longer plausible deniability. They don't really care about it.
They can just shout you down. They've got this big megaphone and they can silence you and they can shout louder than you can. So they don't really care about any of this stuff.
It's a sad situation when you get into, let me go back to my prime directive. I'm going to beat the drum again. I really urge Americans to store food, store water. And I know this is something you've always advocated. Get your know your neighbors and organize for a common protection. I think that of all the issues we've got going, we have a real powder keg of polarization in the country. It's people on the left and people on the right that want to go at each other's throat.
Yes.
And in the next however many months prior to and even after the election, no matter who wins or who becomes president, I think you're going to see an increase in the amount of violence that goes on. Is it going to be a general uprising by Trump supporters if he leaves? No, I don't think so. Is it going to be sporadic instances of people losing their cool? I do think so. On the left, if Trump wins, I think you're going to see nothing but interference with his term and his ability to carry out anything he intends to do as the president. So I urge people to have some type of supply. 90% of people in this country have probably got enough food if they eat the cake mix in their cupboard. They've got enough food for probably 7 days. They could keep themselves going to eating. Outside of that, it's a real issue. The system can break down very easily, and you'll see empty stores like you've never seen, not even during COVID. So I urge people to do that. Store food, water, life-sustainable medicines that you need, and get to know your neighbors and have something to protect yourself with.
That's right. Yeah, we're looking at these spot shortages and stuff like that. And of course, we even saw this in 2020. As soon as they had the lockdown, all of a sudden, farmers are destroying food on the ranch, at the farm or on the ranch, and yet the grocery store shelves are empty because everything is just messed up. They have it in the wrong format to be able to sell at retail. Something that's similar, but Annie Jacobson, who just did a book on nuclear war. She's done a lot of things with the Pentagon about DARPA and about Operation Paperclip and stuff like that. She just did a book about nuclear war. And she said, you know, most people are going to die not from the blast, not from radiation, but from starvation. Correct. And you know, so even with a nuclear war, it's that having that backup food supply that is the key issue, isn't it?
Anything that disrupts this fragile system we have.
Yeah.
There's what's called the just-in-time. You go to buy a loaf of bread in a store. You check out at the counter. And at 10 o'clock at night, about when the store closes, they tally up how many loaves of bread they've sold, what they've got left in their inventory. And an order goes to the bakery. And probably by 4 to 6 o'clock, there's a truck rolling out of that bakery to that store with the loaves of bread that they automatically order through this inventory system. Mm-hmm. It's just in time. The point of this system is to cut down in the amount of reserve food that's sitting around in warehouses. You've got the cost of the warehouse, you've got the cost of warehouse employees, you've got spoilage, you've got huge amounts of money in the inventory that's within that store. So there is no reserve. That's part of our food system that's just disappeared as far as the reserve goes.
Yeah.
It's just in time. And that makes it all the more dangerous than what it's been over the years. You know, everything is automating to the point to where the bean counters, a lot of them don't have a common sense brain cell in their head make these decisions for. I've seen some atrocious situations happen, and it's all from people that just don't have any common sense or any kind of connection to reality, but sure, they're running the system, so sure, you gotta put up with it.
And it's getting worse all the time. You sent us a bunch of clips here, and I'm not sure I've got them here in case you want to call them out. I can show any of these clips that you want to talk about.
Well, I'm talking about the just in time, the direct store distribution system.
Okay, that's this
right
here.
I don't know if you can see that one.
That's DSD. That's right. That's what you've been talking about, the just in time. And I remember, you know, and of course, when we look at just in time, that is the Baltimore Bridge issue, right? The Francis Scott Key thing. If it was an accident or if it was sabotage, the bottom line is that they've got ships trapped inside there. It's going to be a while before they can bring anything back in there, but you know, they can very easily break those connections with any kind of accident or with any kind of sabotage.
Yeah, and the system itself has got enough failabilities without somebody conducting malicious warfare against us by disrupting a system. Any one of a number, just a myriad of issues that make that system function can fail at any one time.
That's right.
And you talk about hacking, I think probably just about as dangerous as hacking is what some of these people running these systems, they're totally incompetent. I'm starting to see a collision, like I said. Well, we spent an hour and a half with our local water company trying to get, they'd updated their system. And the person that was in charge of this at the water company, we found she didn't know what she's talking about. She was at a loss too. Hour and a half later, finally got a resolution on this. I don't know where she went, what she did, but we could not get into the system. And, you know, it's a matter of paying a bill, and they're not going to shut me off. But it's just there's collisions of updating, and there's collisions of dual authentication of these systems. There's so many issues coming into play. They're complex. It's almost like these computer systems get together and they turn into Frankenstein monsters.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they call it Frankenware. Absolutely.
It's just these little side issues just continue to snowball and build on each other.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the key thing. You know, you got a little thing over here, and then that gets compounded at the next stage and before you know it, you got a system that doesn't really work. I remember George Gilder talked about life after Google a few years ago. He wrote a book about that. and it's like, yeah, we would all like to fantasize about life without Google in our life, wouldn't we? But what he was saying was that, you know, you got all these different, you got to remember all these different codes to get in different places and many other aspects of that. But of course, they will take the problems that they create and they will use that to try to direct us into something like biometric identification and permission to get into these systems and say, yeah, you don't want to really remember all those codes.
Isn't that amazing how convenient all talk about the mark of the beast from the Bible.
Oh, yeah.
You talk about these systems they're coming up with. Just amazing how they've always got a fallback of digital currency or some biometric issue or eye scans that just blow me away. They're moving too quickly into stuff. It's starting to compound itself. AI is supposed to sort it out. I see these commercials on TV about AI and go to this company and they've got this and somebody's sitting drinking an energy drink while the person's cleaning the office at 11 o'clock. And then all of a sudden they've come up with a massive new program that's going to solve anything. Well, will it put food on the table? No. Will it give you water? No. All this stuff is artificial. That's and right. It's an illusion that people are living in.
Yes, that's right. It's a virtual reality. And all that virtual reality is going to come crashing down on us, and we're going to be looking around. It's like, well, I don't know how to do anything. That's the key thing about your book, is that it's got practical advice about how to do things, even when we're talking about food that's going to last longer, you know, how to preserve eggs, very simple things like that. You got a free chapter about water and how to maintain your water supply. But you spent time in Zimbabwe. I was just talking about inflation and how it gets away from us. Probably one of the most familiar examples of that was in Zimbabwe, wasn't it?
Oh, my God. My in-laws got their money out of the country years before. My father-in-law was a very incredible person, very visionary. But you could see what was going to happen. And I had to buy this. I couldn't believe it because I can't find it. It's all been used for toilet paper, wallpaper, burning in fires. The Zimbabwe currency, I just bought $100 trillion note. $100 trillion note. And now they're coming out with a gold backed currency. That will work until they get enough people drawn into it. And then the leadership of those countries rape the treasury and drive the thing into the ground again. What they do.
That's right.
They don't have any conscience towards this.
Well, we're going to need $100 trillion bill pretty soon. As a matter of fact, there was some idiot who was saying, you know, we could fix the deficit if we just have a $1 trillion bill or something like that. It was something crazy like that. But they're adding $1 trillion every 90 days to the deficit. So it's not going to be that long.
I'll never forget a story I was told about Germany. In 1923, the Weimar Republic, right after World War I, because of massive amounts of debt put on the German government for war reparations, they started doing the same thing we're doing. They started printing currency. Mm-hmm. It got so out of control, the guy running the central banks over there had a heart attack and died. And when it got to the point to where the inflation was out of control, like it got in Zimbabwe, the story was a lady in an apartment complex heard this clanging and banging, and she goes and looks out her door, and out her door is one of her neighbors, and she's got this big bed sheet tied around what's clanging up the stairs. They were bedpans. The woman had bought 20 bedpans, and the neighbor said, what have you got? I've got bedpans, about 20 of them. What do you buy 20 bedpans for? They're worth something.
Yeah.
The next day, they were worth twice as much.
Wow.
And that is basically where this thing goes, and they can't stop it. It gets it becomes a headless monster trying to satisfy debt by printing money with no backing or no basis is a recipe for disaster.
Mm-hmm.
I know my wife was over there. My brother-in-law was an accountant over in Zimbabwe.
Now that's something for your resume. I was an accountant in Zimbabwe when they had the world's inflation.
Yeah. Well, they call it chartered over there. Anyway, it takes my mother-in-law and my wife to dinner. $70 meal. They go out and he's got two huge oversized suitcases and they're full of endless digit denomination bills. And they had a $70 meal. I've got the receipt of this showing in my book, but they had a $70 meal, and all the time they're eating, it took the staff that whole time to count the money. And it was for $70. And it just blew me away. I mean, you'd think when walking into the restaurant, he's taking somebody for a meal before he hits the airport with those suitcases. But it was just the money to pay the lunch bill. And it's the way to thank God. People think this is a laugh. My father-in-law owned it was the biggest printing company in Africa. And he had to pay his workers he had very, very loyal workers. He had to pay his workers at noon so they could go out and buy groceries, because if you paid them 4 or 5 hours later, the groceries cost twice as much.
Wow.
And people were moving money around in a wheelbarrow, and people didn't want the money. They wanted a wheelbarrow. That was worth more money than the money. And it just got out of control. I don't know how far down the road we're going to go. We are going to have more of this, though. I think everything's being held in check, because it's an election year, and that is so sad for Americans.
And I think I think it's going to get really bad really quickly after the election, and then it's going to more gasoline on the fire by getting both sides right now. You got the people who are heavily partisan in one party or the other. Both of them are being fed this narrative. I go to the conservative press and I go to the mainstream liberal press. And it's amazing to see how each side is absolutely certain their guy's got the election sewn up at this point. They're creating that narrative, that expectation, whether you are a Democrat or you're a Republican, if the other guy wins, it's because democracy is over. That election was stolen. We're going to have to fight. They're creating that. I've never seen anything like this, where there's this total disconnect between the two sides, and with the information that both sides are getting, each side absolutely convinced that their guy is going to win. It's going to be a theft if they don't.
Yeah, if your readers hear somebody's a threat to our democracy, replace the word democracy with the word bureaucracy. That's what the left is pushing for. I often wonder, I read a lot of books about life in the Soviet Union in the 20s, 30s, 40s and the 50s, when the transition took place after Joseph Stalin died in 1953. I see things here as I'm wondering if we've got as much freedom as they had. Mm-hmm. I read stories about people going to plays, and it seemed like a normal society. Mm-hmm. It was communist run, but a normal society in the 30s. And they're going to a theater, and they're going to listen to music at a park. Yet I see things here, and I'm often wondering what have we got now? I think this creeps on over people so quickly that they don't realize what they've lost.
Yeah, we look at the cancelization, how people get canceled and that type of thing. That used to be a really powerful story about Stalinist Russia, the way he canceled, a good example of it was Shostakovich, famous composer. And he just took a dislike to one of his pieces, and he premiered this piece. Stalin was there for the premiere. All the critics loved it, but then Stalin said, "I don't like it." Everybody, he became this outsider. He absolutely canceled him, and yet, it was something that was really only available to Stalin to do that type of canceling. Today, because of the power of social media, the mob can cancel you just as easily.
Yeah, I think it's probably centrally driven, but you look at Russell Brand, they pick somebody out and they start chopping away at this person. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know who Russell Brand is. He's some type of a commentator or whatever. But the bottom line is, if they decide they want to take down a person they don't like, that's exactly what they proceed to try to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's very easy for them to do that. Let's talk a little bit about, what happens with the open borders. Are we going to start seeing organized gangs that are, some people suggested that may be the possibility when you look at the demographics
They're here already.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, from this standpoint, we've seen this in the Soros-controlled district attorneys, where they just come in and loot and rob and that type of thing. And they've gotten very organized in places like San Francisco. Do you expect to see that this is going to start, going all over the country doing this type of thing? And absolutely. I think it will. How do we protect against that? What's a good way to protect?
Well, that's where, like, in my neighborhood group here, we have a dual purpose. We don't operate under Neighborhood Watch. Neighborhood Watch has it's a great idea. It's everybody looking out for what's going on. However, it has the enforcement of law enforcement. That is what enforces. Mm-hmm. We don't do that. We have our own signs. They're a sultry looking woman's eyes that basically tells everybody we're watching you. And if somebody does have a problem, we're on the phone to each other and we're talking about it. And we notify each person here, and we do our own protection should we have to. Now, we don't advocate everybody running around with a gun, but if somebody ends up breaking into a house in my neighborhood, they're probably going to get a 12-gauge shotgun poked up their nose. people here are to the point to where most of them have moved out of these areas. I've got a guy coming that was one of the largest counties in California, communication director, and he says it's a war zone out there. Wow. He's lived all his life out there, other than when he was in Cuba. He's a refugee from Cuba. His father was thrown into hard labor camp. He loathes communism. He saw it firsthand. And the bottom line is, he's trying to get out of there before the elections, because he said, I listen to every communication in this county, between the county commissioners, the mayors, the chiefs of police, the sheriff department, EMTs, fire department, emergency room. And he said it's an absolute war zone at night. And he said he can't wait to get out of there. His wife just retired, and they're just waiting for a couple days here. He's going to know when he can retire. I think the biggest reason is he has a massive, he's 20-some people working for him. He has a massive responsibility with this system, and they just put an entirely new mountaintop system in, and he's concerned that they can't find anybody to replace him. So he's got an issue there, but he tells me it's a war zone. He said they're shutting off alarm systems with cell phone jammers.
Wow.
And these people are sophisticated gangs.
Wow.
They case a place. And this is going to more and more going to happen in the big city, but at some point it's going to start to bleed out into the rest of the countryside. So what do? You prepare and you get your eyes and ears tuned in to what's going on in your neighborhood and organize with your neighbors. We have a radio network we set up, and if we need to have somebody notified, we can squelch everybody in this community.
Is that your patrol formation that you're talking about there?
No, that's something from military days.
Oh, okay.
The patrol formations are basically movements of armed people in either an offensive or defensive posture, and it's just they're movements to put people in specific places so to prevent ambush. And should you get ambushed, you can respond, and you can flank your attacker if from some of them. Anyway, that's a totally different deal.
Okay.
I sent those for you guys to have on hand at some point. Don't ask me. I just do stuff like that. Anyway.
But it's a good example of the breadth of what you're talking about in your book. I mean, whether you're talking about food or water or something like this, in a real societal breakdown situation, how does the military do it? For people that have not been in the military, that don't have any of that experience, you can find that kind of information in Civil Defense Manual.
Yes, and you're going to need that type of thing if it gets really, really bad. You're going to need to be able to know how to move, and we don't hear run around camouflage uniforms with a family shotgun. What we do, though, is have people that are advised of different tactical. We got five basic tactics that we use. Those tactics will defeat anybody. They're simplistic, but they're things that the military has variations of. We just make it into simple into five simple tactical solutions for somebody to defend an area. Mm-hmm. And it's not so hard to learn. You know, people spend a year in war college. Officers go through huge amounts of training. Troops go through practical application. We have the theory, but if we have to activate and do things, everybody's got in their head what we're going to need to do. And mm-hmm. this is what's very important. I think the biggest thing is that if people go to www.civildefensemanual.com, they will, and look under the top tab that says, what's in the book? What's in the Civil Defense Manual? It'll give a list of table of contents. It'll also give a list of issues that you're not going to see any other place. And why do I put them in there? All of this together, I homogenize into surviving and mm-hmm. surviving with other people in your neighborhood, because you are not going to be able to survive alone. That's the bottom line. That's people right. think, oh, I'll get my shotgun and two or three of my neighbors. We're going to have our shotguns. We're going to do guard duty. Unless you have it organized, that's not going to last very long. The guy with the shotgun that's in his house without any neighbors, he's got to sleep sometime. What's mm-hmm. he going to do? Have his 8-year-old son with a shotgun there? You know,
yeah.
It's something that you need to have cooperation with your neighbors.
Yes. Yes, that's absolutely right. And you know, even if you don't have a societal breakdown, if you got that connection with your neighbors, maybe you can have something to do with the local government. Make sure that you got some people that are not going to be predators. That's one of the key takeaways, I think, for 2020. You talk about the end of democracy is really the end of bureaucracy is really what they're talking about. And we were ruled by bureaucrats. That's what I said in 2020. I said, why am I going to go vote here? There's not anybody locally or nationally that hasn't turned this thing over to a bunch of unelected bureaucrats. So why would I vote for any of these characters? But you could make
that true.
Yeah. You could make a situation where, you know, if you know your neighbors and you organize, before things start to happen like that, you can organize to make sure that these people are going to kind of be a check for what's going to be imposed from the national or maybe even the state level on people. And so there's when they want to isolate us and they want to put us into a digital world, we need to be thinking how we can do exactly the opposite, because they've designed their plans a very long time ago. They've been practicing them. And they're a trap to enslave us. So we need to do exactly the opposite of we can see where they're right. headed. The difficult thing is doing something else to counter it.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to succeed. There's just too, you know, we've got one thing in this kind of, it's almost in our DNA, what we have in the American mind. We have a rebelliousness that I think is probably as the same or worse than what our founding fathers and the citizenry then had. I think we still have a rebelliousness. Unfortunately, we have a lot of people that have been propagandized into submission as far as being men feminized and mm-hmm. There's just an inability of people to see a real crisis because they live in illusion so much. A lot of people have lived under a nanny state. I see it here. They move from California or they move from New York. And these people can't conceive of doing things by yourself,
yeah.
Unless the government tells you who could do it, you know. And that's right. I tell them, you know, we had a conversation. They got a little upset about some of the things they're talking about. I said, look, I'm not talking about doing this now. I'm talking a worst case scenario, taking cars and blocking off the road as police do in a serpent. I show this in the book. There's one of the diagrams I sent you. It's a procedure the police use, and it's set up from a kinetic energy point of view to stop people from breaking through a blockade of cars. Mm-hmm. And I show that, and I told these people, oh, they got upset about this. And I said, why don't you guys go out? There's about 11 of them. We kicked them out of our group. We told them they thought they were conservatives, but they aren't. And we said, why don't you guys create a neighborhood choir and see if that keeps people from breaking your door down, you know, if things go bad. But, you know, we deal with these people, and some of them are just misdirected. Now they're starting to think differently. And our group still functions. We have some hardcores. We've a lot of hardcore people that have been out there. Not necessarily all of them in the service. One of my best ones hasn't been in the service, but he's been in law enforcement, and he knows what can happen because he lived it in California.
Oh yeah. So, yeah. That's kind of like a war zone in some cases, right? By the way, I've got an interesting quote here, which I absolutely agree with him. I think he's right. This is on Rockfan, Brian Kinney, and thank you for the tip. He says, regarding the bridge impact, he thinks it's GPS spoofing. And I think that's probable that it was something like that. It's been around for 30 years or more, less than $500 worth of equipment to pull it off. You can do it from nearby. The hacking verbiage is a red herring. I think that is very likely because, yeah, they've used GPS spoofing.
Yeah, that's a good point he brings up there. Yeah. That's an excellent point. That probably sounds more logical than trying to cut into a ship's navigation and control system.
Yeah, that's right.
What he's talking about and spoofing, yeah.
Yeah, everybody's going to be using GPS. Yeah,
exactly. You're 700 yards from a bridge. Oh, you got to take a left-hand sharp turn, you know, right toward the piling.
That's right. All you had to do is maybe install a cheap device up there and activate it from a spotter. Yeah. Doing that. That's right. On Rockfin.
I think people need to start looking at, I read the Bible once a day. I'm trying to do something about my heathen past, but the long and short of it is, I think we need to walk backwards, not to absolute doctrine and dogma of religion, but the message. I saw a meme the other day. It was God talking to Jesus Christ, and he says, "How's it going, my son?" He said, "Well, Father," he said, it was going pretty good, but now they're worshiping me. We're worshiping me. They're not worshiping the message that I brought to them. And I think that's critical. I think to try to live by some type of a Christian ideal, but people better understand one thing. Unless you're capable of extreme violence, unless you're capable of it and you don't use it, you're not peaceful. You're harmless. People that don't know how to use violence, and I'm not advocating it.
Yeah,
I'm saying that you have to defend yourself, know how to use violence. If you can't do that, then you're harmless. And unfortunately, a lot of Americans, even with this independence, have gotten propagandized into, oh, zero tolerance, don't hurt anybody, blah, blah, blah. There comes a time when you're probably going to have to.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Absolutely. And let me just say real quickly before we run out of time here, thank you for the tip, Michelle Obama and Dougalug. Thank you very much. He said, thank you. Have a drink on me and enjoy your weekend. Well, thank you. I can have a lot of drinks for $10. I can have several soft drinks.
I see some really good-looking strawberries coming out of a pail right behind you.
That's right. Yeah, it's well, you know, if people want to take a look at the Civil Defense Manual, and again, it is very comprehensive, and you've got examples in there. Water is a very good example of that, and you make that available for free. People can get an idea of the kind of depth of information that you've got just looking at those free samples, and they're very useful. And it covers a wide variety of things. And if it's not something that is, you know, things that you understand, but maybe it's not your area of expertise, you've partnered with other people who are experts in that. And that's the key thing. I've had so many people thank me after they got the Civil Defense Manual. And again, I've got it right here. It goes as a pair. We've been showing the thing, but it's a pair of manuals. And you only sell it as a pair because you want people to get the full picture, and you only sell it as a physical book because the computer is not necessarily going to be around. And so it's a great way for people to prepare so that they are able to defend themselves and protect their loved ones and others in the neighborhood. And to also, it's something that, if nothing happens, at least you've met your neighbors and maybe you can come together and work on some other common problems that you can rally around. And so I think it's a great approach.
I think that that's one of the biggest things that we've gained in our neighborhood. We all know each other now.
Yeah.
We got an old gal that we were taking medicines to because she's very reclusive. We didn't know people all the people around here, most of them didn't know anything about her. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up talking to her, and we asked people in the neighborhood, is there something, is there a handicap or do you have a disability? I mean, we're not going to play taxi cab driver, but we do want to know that we can help people if there's some type of an emergency.
That's right.
Because they're people, they're our neighbors. That's what we've always done in these cities, these places that we've formed, not just for commerce. It was, they were formed for people to help take care of each other and protect each other. So,
That's right. And it's one of these things where, you know, it's so difficult to get to know neighbors because nobody comes out of their house, typically. You don't usually even see anybody. Garage
door community.
That's right.
We go to work, we come home, put the garage door down. Most people never get to know their neighbors. Now, I've always been different because I'm from a southern Minnesota farm family, and I've just been one of these people that
My
neighbors are.
This is a real felt need.
And so some joke. I want to know if I got some joker that's a problem my neighborhood, too.
That's right.
So I make an excuse to go around, but it's usually been, I've only had one instance of that in my entire life. Guy that I didn't like, and I told him, he started complaining about the black guy moving in, and I told him, don't you ever park your bicycle in front of my house again. Yeah. I said, that guy's a great guy. I know that guy. And this guy was a former city inspector from Los Angeles who was so sour. and, you know, people didn't like him. But the point being this, take care of your neighbors.
That's right.
They are what is going to help protect you.
And there's a real felt need for this, and people understand that. So it's a great way to build relationships, and who knows, it could save your life. So thank you so much for joining us, Jack Lawson. CivilDefenseManual.com, a great resource. Folks, have a great weekend. Thank you for joining us, and thank you, Jack, for joining us.
Thank you, David.
Let me tell you, the David Knight Show, you can listen to with your ears. You can even watch it by using your eyes. In fact, if you can hear me, that means you're listening to the David Knight Show right now. Yeah. Good job. And you want to know something else? You can find all the links to everywhere to watch or listen to the show at thedavidknightshow.com. That's a website.